This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people play by the rules, but the real game changers break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we're talking to the risk takers, the rebels, and the ones rewriting the playbook. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. This week, we're casting an eye on President Donald Trump's first 100 days in office, and one particular aspect of them. Let's call it Trump versus the courts. ABC News reported that there have been at least 220 lawsuits in courts across the country against the Trump administration so far. That shakes out to be two new filings a day on average since he took office. And the pace is accelerating. ABC reported that there were 20 lawsuits in January, approximately 70 in both February and March, and about 50 so far in April. These lawsuits challenge more than two dozen executive orders, take on the firing of 20 high-ranking government officials, and fight against dozens of other executive actions, from those aimed at shrinking the size of the federal payroll to Trump's effort to end birthright citizenship. And while it's early on in the story, so far federal judges have blocked key parts of Trump's agenda, ranging from parts of his immigration policy and military guidelines to his effort to roll back diversity and equity initiatives. Reuters found that federal judges have halted or curtailed dozens of key Trump initiatives. That in turn limits the administration's ability to conduct mass deportations, defund refugee settlement programs, and restrict automatic birthright citizenship. Many of those rulings are under appeal. As Trump rolls out new policies and new lawsuits start stacking up, some say it's because he's overstepping the boundaries the Constitution put in place to contain the executive branch of government. MSU public policy professor Matt Grossman talked with WWJ's Taylor Dietz to discuss Trump's expansion of executive powers and how it's put him up against the judicial system.
There has been lots of action and lots of things that were promised in the campaign that he's been able to implement or try to implement via executive action. So he'll have a lot of things to go through that he's been able to, actions he's been able to take. That might be different than results, though, in terms of what we're going to remember from here on forward. I think certainly the exertion of executive power is going to have long-term consequences, even if the courts or Congress eventually push back. We saw that from the first Trump administration to the Biden administration to the second Trump administration, increasing assertions of executive power, mirroring a lot of trends around the world that are worrying to those people who watch Democratic progression. In addition to that, we have potential for very large economic effects. The first-term tariffs had economic effects that mattered for elections 2 and 4 years down the line, and these are much bigger than those. So if they stay in place, there's likely to be big effects there as well.
In your opinion, how important is the first 100 days in your administration?
Well, we get this timeline from FDR when there was a lot of action in Congress and a lot of success moving forward proposals there. So this is pretty different. This is an administration that hasn't moved much of anything through Congress, is not necessarily expecting Congress to be the main source of action, and has instead tried to work through the executive branch and really not worry too much about what the lawyers say, and instead just sort of dealt with the consequences of whatever actions he wanted to take. So it's a different 100 days than we've seen in the past. But certainly when you're talking about executive action, when you can do it immediately, this is an important period for that. The other difference is that, the Doge and Musk have really tried to learn from previous failures of conservative administrations to try to roll back the state by doing a bunch of stuff before the political appointees are even in place. And as fast as possible so that you've appointed someone Secretary of Interior, but told them here's all the people who are already on the chopping block. So that is also something that could only have been done very early in the term. Certainly, we've seen more executive orders than any time since World War II at the beginning of the administration. That is different than all of them, not just Trump's first term. But the main point I was talking about is usually the first 100 days are used to evaluate how well the president is getting their agenda through Congress. And this is a different marker in that he's had very little success on that, but a lot of actions taking place. It's just all in the executive branch.
Got it. Now, when you compare his first term to this term, what are the differences there?
Well, one difference is that the lawyers had more power to stop things from moving forward in the executive branch during the first term. During the second term, they have prepared to kind of go for the distance and then deal with the consequences. The other piece is that he has a lot more personnel in place who are not just kind of holdovers from Republican administrations generally, but are more loyalists to Donald Trump. So that's causing some problems, but it also means that there's less resistance to his initial ideas and his desire for quick action.
How do you think his administration has done on his campaign promise of deporting illegal and criminal immigrants?
Well, he spoke a lot about how it was taking too long and in part due to too much kind of process to move people out of the U.S. And so he's certainly taken a lot of action to try to do that quickly. But he's still been stymied both by the courts and just by the institutions that there aren't a lot of people who are sort of ready and able to be deported quickly. And so he's going to have to build build that infrastructure if he wants to do that over the long term. But certainly he's tested the legal ground for all kinds of immigration action within the first 100 days and is, losing some, but has been able to engineer some deportations that Biden wasn't willing or able to do.
The current court case that's drawing the most attention involves a federal judge who found probable cause to hold the Trump administration in contempt for deportations to El Salvador. For a little background on this case, the U.S. Supreme Court temporarily barred Trump's administration from deporting Venezuelan men in custody without a judicial review previously mandated by the justices. That was on April 19th. The men were deported anyway. The administration has alleged that the Venezuelans are members of the Tren de Aragua criminal gang. Family members and lawyers for the migrants have disputed this claim. The judge ordered their return, and it still hasn't happened. That judge could also seek criminal prosecution of officials in the Trump administration for violating court orders. Nancy Cordes, CBS News' chief White House correspondent, joined Odyssey to discuss.
So let's talk about this high-stakes development. What is in this 46-page ruling from James Boasberg?
Boasberg. Well, he's basically taking this to the next level, and he is now warning that that administration officials could be held in contempt of court if they don't abide by what he has been calling for them to do, which is to give these 200 some Venezuelans who were flown out of the U.S. to a prison in El Salvador last month an opportunity to have due process and challenge their removal. And then that's a serious escalation here, because if you are found to be in contempt of court, you could go to jail.
So what is the next step? And I guess in this court order, it really is laid out. This is what I'm going to do.
Right, exactly. And he did say that the administration has the opportunity to come back and offer some alternative to all of these Venezuelans being brought back to have a removal hearing. He said he's open to their suggestions, but that they can't just continue to ignore his rulings. Remember, he's the judge when these Venezuelan men were placed on planes in the first place and flown to El Salvador. He issued those orders while they were still in the air, saying, turn around, don't land. These are unauthorized deportations. These men have not had an opportunity to get DOJ, saying that Boasberg has no right to seize control of the president's authority to conduct. Defiant note here, we've already heard from, we're going to appeal this because the president is committed to ensuring that criminally illegal migrants are no longer a threat to Americans and their communities. So they have no intention of bringing these men back.
It really does set up this fight between the executive and judicial branches. So if the judge makes a criminal referral to the Justice Department, I mean, it's Trump's Justice Department.
Who is, and that's a great point, but apparently with contempt proceedings, the judge does have the opportunity to appoint a side lawyer, someone who does not work to conduct the process. And so there would be some independence there. But, you know, you're absolutely right. We're in unprecedented territory. And this is not the only judge that is turning the screws on the administration. You now have a U.S. district judge in Maryland who is saying similar things. This is in the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the El Salvadoran migrant who had a judge's order from 2019 saying he should not be deported from the U.S., but he was one of the people who was on these planes as well. She has been telling the Trump administration that they need to bring him back. And they say that she doesn't have the authority to tell them to do that. And so she's now calling for depositions of administration officials. So things are getting more tense in these clashes between the judiciary and the executive branch. And it's unclear where it's going to go from here.
So who do you think would be called to testify?
She's already laid out that she wants depositions of State Department officials, of Homeland Security officials, anyone who was involved in ICE officials, the decision to place Kilmar Abrego Garcia on that list on the manifest to begin with. ICE officials early on conceded that that was a mistake. It was an administrative error. Basically, someone didn't notice the fact that he was not supposed to leave the country. But now the administration is arguing actually it wasn't a mistake. It was not a mistake, and that he is right where he belongs. And so, you know, she wants to know more about how this came about and what is being done, if anything, to try to bring him back.
This may be more politics, you know, than policy. I mean, we want due process and all. But what do you make of the news that came out that this gentleman had a domestic violence, you know, proceeding that didn't go forward, but that his wife had attacked him? I mean, that doesn't play well in the court of public opinion, but it's still, people still are, you know, they're entitled to due process.
Right. Absolutely. It doesn't look great. His wife basically filed for what amounts to a restraining order against him. She said that he was violent and that he hit her. I think this was back in 2021, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago. She put out a statement yesterday saying that you know, she had been in an abusive relationship before, and that's why she got worried in this relationship. But regardless, it doesn't justify deporting him from the country when there's a judge's order that he not be deported. But it certainly feeds into the administration's argument that he is not a great guy. Of course, they've gone further, and they're saying not only that he's a domestic abuser, but that he is a human trafficker. And now they're saying not only is he an MS-13 gang member, but he is a gang leader. That is what the attorney general said yesterday. They haven't provided any evidence of that. But certainly this the TRO filing is going to bolster their case in the court of public opinion.
Certainly interesting. Never dull. Thank you so much. CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes.
Made immigration a key focus of his re-election campaign, and many political observers say it led to his success at the ballot box last November. But now, amid a string of lawsuits over deportations and immigration operations by multiple federal agencies, recent polls show that even the president's supporters are souring on his immigration policies. Bill Hing, a professor of immigration law at the University of San Francisco School of Law, joined Odyssey to talk about it.
Is there a clear line that the Trump administration has crossed in its immigration policy that's not so palatable now for his supporters?
Thanks for the invitation to comment on this. I do think that they've crossed the line, and here's what's happening. I think that common, decent folks in the United States, which I believe that that's still a majority of the country, they are realizing that it's friends, neighbors, folks that they've known for many years that are being swept up by these immigration operations. And they're known to be good, decent people. And on top of that, these deportations without any hearings on airplanes that are headed to these awful detention centers in El Salvador, it's something that I think Trump supporters didn't realize could happen without any hearings. And even the Supreme Court has said, it's a conservative Supreme Court, that due process is important, that people deserve a right to be heard before they're deported. So I think that's the line that's been crossed, is that the due process has been violated by the Trump administration.
And I know in the last few weeks, we've seen a number of rulings come out on immigration policies. We saw the ruling earlier this week from a federal judge in San Francisco on sanctuary cities policy. We saw another ruling on birthright citizenship. How effective are the courts in scaling back some of what many folks view as cruel immigration policy?
I think the courts have been very effective. I'm very proud of the court. I'm proud of the Supreme Court as well. Not only the examples that you gave, but yesterday, the Trump administration, after facing more than 100 lawsuits, decided to reinstate over 1,000 foreign student visas that had been canceled by using an AI program to ferret out foreign students that they thought were troubling, but they realized that that was a problem. And so the courts have stood firm that birthright citizenship is a constitutional right. They've said that sanctuary policies are not a basis for cutting back funding for different programs to different cities. And the courts have stood by the cities and the non-citizens so far.
And in a broader sense, how effective have his immigration policies actually been in curtailing illegal immigration?
Well, the truth is that the numbers of arrests at the southern border are down. That is definitely true. And I've talked to people. I was in San Diego 2 weeks ago and went to the border. The shelters are empty on both sides of the border. And what's happening is the migrants that had been traditionally coming to the U.S. southern border are being directed to other parts of Latin America and other parts of Mexico. So in that sense, there are fewer people at the border. But what my sources in Mexico tell me is that folks are desperate and they're hiding in other parts. And so the numbers are down in terms of arrests, but also the numbers of deportation are not any higher than under the Biden administration. So these high-profile deportations are not any more than what the Biden administration had been doing.
We're running out of time, but one last question for you. Does this become so unpalatable for the public that having a hard stance on immigration becomes a liability going into the midterms?
This could backfire on the Republicans, definitely. This and, of course, other actions dealing with tariffs and attacking other groups like those who are supplying help for children, education, that kind of thing. I think those are adding up to be big factors in the midterm elections, and I think the Republicans are realizing that.
When it comes to how Republicans fare in the midterms, some pundits say it could depend on Trump's ability to get a trade deal done. If his first 100 days were devoted to immigration and culture war issues like DEI and trans athletes, and slashing the size of government staffing, the next phase will bring a pivot, according to The Hill. They say that Trump is going to focus on trade deals and peace deals next. Precisely, The Hill found that Trump will, quote, focus in the weeks ahead on foreign policy, where he has struggled to deliver on a pledge to end the war in Ukraine and has kept a close eye on the Middle East. We can only watch and see if that work continues to land his administration back in courtrooms. This show is produced by Christy Strouser and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.